I just want to welcome the minister in our midst, because if you look at our agenda, we don't have her on the agenda, but I'll speak about that after we have adopted the agenda. Zolani, can Mr. Sakasa go through the agenda? Definitely, members, with the presence of the minister, it means that we have to rearrange the agenda now that she's here. Definitely, when she's here, we'll have to accommodate her. Zolani?
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to the minister, and good morning to members and the department at large. The agenda for today, the Wednesday, the 1st of March, is as follows. Apologies, adoption of the agenda, and we will then get to a progress report by the department with regards to committee recommendations on the oversight visit that we had in the Northern Cape in September last year. Members will deliberate on that, and that will be followed by another short briefing by the department on inspections conducted in the clothing and textile industry. Members will then again deliberate on those inspections. Then there will be consideration of the draft consolidated report on the national minimum wage, which will be followed by the consideration of draft minutes of 15 and 22 February 2016. Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I only receive two apologies, if I may, Mr. Mkongi and Mr. Kawama.
I'm sure before, I think before we, I can ask the members to adopt or edit the agenda. I have received a message from the minister towards the end of last week that she won't be able to come on Friday as it was scheduled for the committee. She will only be available today. And that is why we have the minister today. So my suggestion is that in this program, let's put the minister the report on national minimum wage as number one, and then we can proceed with the rest of the program. Remember that we were supposed to be doing APPs, but because Parliament has not yet tabled, not a single committee that is busy with that, so we then had to change the program and look at the reports, preparing ourselves for the oversight that will be taking soon, and then on the report which was part of the committee program in any case. So I appeal to members that that's how we should deal with the meeting today. Honorable Noliwe.
Thanks, Chair. In light of what we have just alluded to, Chair, I want to propose as follows, if possible. We had two items that were to be presented by the department. I wanted to propose, can we put the presentation by the minister on national minimum wage there? Then after the presentation of the minister and deliberations, we take the consideration of the draft consolidated report on the national minimum wage, because they talk to almost the same thing. I am not sure whether time will permit, because there's also the issue of time for us to deal with the two presentations by the department. But let's put them in the latter part so that we will depend on time.
Honorable Loliwe has, thank you, member has just seconded the approach that we should take, that we should give the minister first and then added that after the minister we listen to our own report, which is also on national minimum wage by the researchers, not only researched material, but what we have gone through as parliament. So it's part of that report, which is a parliamentary report. And then the rest will follow. Honorable Van Skalsen.
Thank you, Chairperson. In light of the new development, I would propose that we re-look at the committee program as we adopted it last week for possible changes that needs to be effected to the program. Thank you.
Okay. I think let's put that one as a, so you will be adding the, we are adding on the agenda that we must look on the program. Okay, so members, I don't see any other hand. I think we agree that we are going to move in that direction. Minister, you are welcome in the committee. We are looking forward to hear from the horse's mouth, because you are part of the deliberations yourself and the deputy president, so we will be getting all what transpired that resulted to the outcome. And the outcome is the announcement of 3.5. How did you get there? The announcement of your 20 rand per 40 hour and all that. Just take us through so that we are all on the same wavelength and we can ask questions where we have no clarity. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, and good morning to the honourable members. Chairperson, I do believe that you received the documents from us, which were the following documents: the agreement on the introduction of a national minimum wage, the declaration on wage inequality and labour market stability, and the accord on collective bargaining and industrial action. These pieces of documents were the ones that was agreed upon, and the declaration was signed by all constituencies except only one labor organization, but also I will explain on that one. Firstly, Chair, I will just summarize on the issues because I do believe that the members have gone through those documents. But also I will indicate in the outstanding issues that are supposed to be dealt with by the task teams and the committee of principals. Firstly, the issue is that why the national minimum wage? As we're well aware, in the manifesto of the ANC, we said we will look at the possibility of the implementation. In fact, we said we will be investigating in the next 5 years that we said in 2014. But we have went beyond the investigation whether there is a possibility to implement the national minimum wage or, not. Firstly, the reason for the national minimum wage is to support and strengthen the collective bargaining. It doesn't take over the collective bargaining responsibility. And also, we took it as the means to try and minimize the wage gap. And let me clarify from the onset that the national minimum wage is not going to take over or review the collective bargaining agreement minimum wages that has been agreed upon. And secondly, it's not going to review the sectoral determinations except where the minimum wage through the collective bargaining and the sectoral determination is lesser than the national minimum wage, because then we have to adjust it to the level of the national minimum wage. But if the sectoral determination or the collective agreement minimum wage is higher than the minimum wage, it will be remain in that particular level. So that's what I want to clear first, Chairperson. But let me also indicate that all the social partners at NEDLAC have agreed on the following. And when I talk about the social partners, it's business, community, organized labor, and the government. Organized labor is constituted by three federations. That is COSATU, FEDUSA, and NATO. And all of them have agreed. Now, the reason why COSATU didn't sign on the date when we're supposed to sign, they have requested that they should be given an opportunity to go back and report to their central executive committee. And they said that is their internal processes. So that's why the deputy president has given them a go-ahead. But they said we must continue with signing on that particular day, because all of us were agreed that we'll be signing the agreement on a Tuesday. In fact, the initial proposal was that let us sign it on a Sunday or Monday. But unfortunately, the deputy president was not available, and then we agreed on a Tuesday, all of us. Now, in terms of the level that was agreed upon, it was agreed upon on the national minimum wage at 20 rand per hour. And in terms of the panel, because the panel said it's 20 rand an hour, 40 hours a week, and it will amount to 3,500. But we didn't cap it. That's why we said it's 20 rand an hour, because in terms of the working hours in South Africa, we're still only 45 hours a week. So if you're working 40 hours, it will be 3,500. And if it's 45 hours, it will be 3,900. And that's what should be clear. And that's why even the deputy president was even clarifying that during the media briefing. And secondly, it was agreed that the national minimum wage should be implemented not later than the 1st of May 2018. But we have also agreed that it will be implemented depending on the finalization of the legislation, because we are going to have a national minimum wage bill that is going to be tabled in Parliament. And also we have to align some of the legislation with that particular national minimum wage bill. And therefore we will be amending the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, and that will be a technical amendment. And also we'll be amending the Employment Equity Act to align it with the national minimum wage. But also I do believe that it will be a technical nature of those amendments. And then also we'll be amending the Labor Relations Act. I think most of the amendments will be effected on the Labor Relations Act, because during the discussions we're looking at also stabilizing the conflict in the workplace, of which we were using the National Framework Agreement that was signed by all federations, including the unions that were affected at that particular time, to say let us look at the possibility of assisting the workers, but at the same time considering the stability in the workplace. So that's where you are going to find most of the amendment, the Labor Relations Act. And also, Chairperson, under the declaration on wage inequality document that we have submitted to you, that's where we have even indicated on page 3, it starts from 3.4.1 on how are we going to deal with the amendments in the labor relations. So those issues are highlighted in that particular document. And I must say all those issues are agreed upon by all social partners. And in terms of the accord on collective bargaining and industrial action, those issues, all constituencies made a commitment that they will play their role as per the constituency, and it was agreed upon, and therefore it's one of the documents also that has taken a lot from the National Framework Agreement, of which it was agreed upon. It was by then chaired by the Deputy President Kgalema Motlanthe when that national framework was agreed upon, of which all the constituencies signed. And there are outstanding issues, Chairperson, on the national minimum wage, of which we said the NEDLAC should further discuss them. One of them is the medium-term aspiration targets on the national minimum wage, and also the adjustment of the national minimum wage and the review of the national minimum wage. But that one we said after the establishment of the National Minimum Wage Commission, that should be the responsibility of that commission. And then what NEDLAC is going to be briefed upon is that how is the commission going to be constituted, but also we have already agreed that each constituency will send 3, except government, that will have appoint 4 members to participate in that. So it means it's going to be 3 members from organized labor, 3 from organized business, and 3 from constituency, and 4 from government. And then we said, let then the Department of Labor come up with the role and the responsibility of that commission. Because there were some proposals that say it should be an independent commission, but the question is, who is the implementer? Because at the end of the day, the implementer will be government, and therefore they must make a recommendation. That was the proposal by the government. So we've agreed that let us look at that, and then it will be submitted to the Committee of Principals. And the other one is the hours of work, because in terms of the basic conditions of employment and some of the bargaining agreements, they have indicated the hours of work, that the worker can't be paid less than certain hours. And those hours are based on the circumstances that are beyond the employer or the employee. For example, if you find that in the construction sector, the worker goes to work and that worker will find that it's raining and therefore they can't continue with the work. So it's beyond both the employer and the employee. And therefore, since the worker has gone to that particular work, therefore the employer must pay a certain amount of money based on the hours that will be agreed upon. And that issue was sent back to the advisory panel to look at the possibility of reviewing what was recommended by the panel. Because the panel proposed 4 hours, and the community and government proposed 5 hours, and organized labor were at 6 hours, and business were saying they will take what the advisory panel was saying, which was 4 hours that was recommended. And also the issue of on exclusions. There was a proposal that the EPWP must be excluded from the national minimum wage. Initially, everybody agreed, but when we're drafting the final declaration, organized labor said, no, they are no longer agreeing with that one. We need to review, including the community. And therefore, we said there was a proposal that was saying public works should give them the commitment on how they are going to monitor that in terms of the implementation of the EPWP, everybody will comply with the law, because the law says a person can be employed under the EPWP for 2 years, not more than 2 years, except if they have applied for the exemption. And also, they can apply for the exemption once, not twice. And then they were saying also public works must come with an exemption strategy before they can agree on the issues, because they were saying if there is an exclusion, maybe we need to consider to put public works on a certain tier. So those are the issues that we said let the task team on wage inequality look at it and bring it back to the Committee of Principals. And the Committee of Principals, by the way, it is constituted by 6 members of each constituency. So from the government, the Committee of Principals is led by the Deputy President and 6 ministers. So each constituency has nominated 6 members. In terms of the coverage of the national minimum wage, looking at the situation currently, about 6.6 million workers will benefit from the national minimum wage, looking at the current situation. I have requested the Chief of Staff to bring the copies, and he will give it to the Secretary for Distribution, Chairperson, because I just want to take you through that particular, those 3-page document. Firstly, when you look at the current situation, this was done in 2014. We find out that about 2.4 million workers are not covered. It's either by the sectoral determination, no organized or under bargaining situation. And also, when you look at bargaining council, on the private bargaining council, is only around 800,000 workers that are covered, and in public sector is about 1.5 million that are covered, and those who belong to trade union in the private sector, they are 1.04. So in terms of the sectoral determination covers about 4.87 million workers. So most of the highly paid workers are those that, not the highly paid, the highly covered workers are those that are paid through the sectoral determination. But at the same time, we're looking at the median wage in South Africa as a whole, and that is why we finally agreed on the current proposal of 20 rands that was proposed then, but now it's a final agreement of which all the constituencies have agreed upon. The other slide indicates that in terms of the bargaining councils within the minimum hourly wage rates below 20 rand, where the increase in terms of the minimum wage can be expected. We have just put that particular slide so that the members can see how this minimum wage is going to assist those workers who are at a lower level. For example, if you look at the hairdressing industry, those people are earning R6.11 per hour. So those are the lowest paid. And also in the furniture, they are being paid R9.08 an hour. So those were the lowest paid. But in terms of the sectoral determinations, the lowest paid is in the taxi industry, where they are paid R10.78 an hour. So we have said, looking at the situation, let us also consider not to come up with a high figure in terms of the level, of which then will create a challenge of finding that most of the workers will be retrenched if the companies are saying they won't be able to afford that. But Chairperson, also let me also just indicate that there were sectors, particularly the domestic and the farming sector, of which we said we need to have in a phase-in approach. On domestic workers, we said they must be paid 75% for the next 2 years after the implementation, so that they can be able as well at the end of the day to be at the same level in terms of the national minimum wage. And we said the agricultural sector should be at a 90% as part of the phase-in approach. And looking at the current situation, we believe that when we implement those phase-in approach in the 2 years, then employers can be able to adjust, and they will be able, therefore, to afford that particular minimum wage level at a certain period of time. So this, therefore, Chairperson, was also informed by the research reports that were submitted to the panel of experts, because we said the panel experts should look at the researchers' reports, all of them, and also include the report by the portfolio committee when you were doing public hearings, and look at the socio-economic challenges at this particular time, and even when we implement the national minimum wage. So those issues were taken into consideration. I think by those few words, Chairperson, allow me to end here, and then we will wait for the question, except if the Director General wants to add something. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Minister. There's an elaborated report by the Minister on how the processes went about to get to where they are, or where we are all with the national minimum wage. And members, the first member is Honorable Bahrain.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Minister. I apologize for being a few minutes late. I'm sorry about that. Minister, thank you very much for this report back. I want to first of all ask a general question. You have said that, obviously, COSATU hasn't signed yet. I'd like to know when they're going to sign, and whether you are sure that they are happy with the report as it stands. It seems from the press that they're happy with the report, they're just going to give some feedback from their members. But I'd like to know your comment on it, whether they're happy or whether they're going to propose any changes. You've got your ear close to the ground, I'm sure. And then what I want to know as well is that once everyone has signed, how sure are you that in fact COSATU is not going to renege at a later date when they make representations to the Portfolio Committee and indeed to Parliament? Because as you will recall, Minister, Last time there were big amendments to the Labor Relations Act 2 years ago, NEDLAC had signed off on certain agreements, and that was then reneged upon by the trade union movement, and in fact Parliament changed it. So NEDLAC in fact became a toy telephone, as opposed to what you seem to believe. And maybe you can just give us assurance that in your mind that everything is going to go through as is agreed upon. So that's just the general question in terms of where we stand. Also in terms of the exclusion minister, and thank you for bringing up the EPWP, but what about trainees? What about people who are studying or being taught or being trained in some way? Is there going to be exemptions for them? And where do we stand in terms of the future? In terms of hours of work, you said that there's still some sort of problems there, and it's, you're talking about 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours, or whatever. I know that your panel of experts suggested 4 hours, and I know that the employers suggested 4 hours is correct. Obviously, at the end of the day, that will be a very big point, because, as you know, Minister, some employers are saying they can't afford the minimum wage as being debated. It certainly hasn't been agreed upon, because COSATU, being the largest body in this exercise, haven't agreed upon it. But they're saying then that maybe they can afford only 4 hours a day as opposed to any other length of time. And then, Minister, also, you will recall that the Treasury said that we will lose, and I think they said at some stage, close on 700,000 jobs. What is your intelligence telling us? How many jobs will we lose when this actually goes through? And how many retrenchments and liquidations and that sort of thing? Maybe you've also done that sort of research. I hope you have, because the employer organizations are mooting anything up to 3 million jobs being lost. So maybe you can comment on that as well, which would be important for us to know about. You also say, Minister, that about 6.6 million people will benefit. That figure can't be correct, Minister, because obviously there will be retrenchments. So maybe you can adjust that figure as to how many people will indeed benefit from this. My suggestion is it will be closer to 4 million will benefit, as opposed to 6.6. And then also maybe you can comment, Minister, on our president has trumpeted that we are expecting to somehow manufacture 10 million jobs over the next 5 years. Well, that's when he said it was over 5 years. We're already 2 years down the line when he first said it, and we've lost a million jobs. So maybe it's 11 million now in the next 3 years. He hasn't corrected that figure. It'll be interesting to see what you have to say. But this is certainly going to get in the way of our president's dream for that creation of 5 million jobs, because one can fully understand, Minister, and maybe you want to comment on this, with a minimum wage it will be a lot more difficult to create the jobs. And we all know, Minister, that it's the small business sector that is creating the majority of jobs, and they're the people who are going to suffer the most from a minimum wage. And then finally, Minister, I've got a lot more, but I won't go through it all, but finally, from my generalized point of view, one can understand that if NEDLAC, big business, would very strongly support a high minimum wage, because they can afford it and they have the wherewithal to be able to sustain it. And we have very little voice from small business, who are going to be the engine room of job creation. They can't sustain it, so it almost kills off the development of small business, and maybe you want to comment on that as well. And thank you for the opportunity, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Buckland. Minister, that question is, Honourable Buckland, amongst the things that is asking, he wants you to speculate on his speculation that there might be jobs. He also wants you to comment on speculation whether COSATU will come or not come. And again, Honourable Buckland, I think when you say COSATU does not agree, I don't know if COSATU does not agree yet. I think the minister must, then the questions are directed to the minister. Because what is on public is that COSATU, and what the minister has said, that COSATU wants to consult. As you have already correctly said, that it's a big union, they want to consult. That they don't agree, or they might not, I'm sure the minister will answer that question, as we have already correctly asked it from...
Sorry, Madam Chair, my question stands. I don't know what you're trying to do, but my question stands. The minister can choose not to answer.
Excuse me. Honorable Bakhrain, I think you must not do that, because whatever you say, I will allow you chance to speak. Whether you say something wrong or right, I don't interject when you speak. And that's what you always do. I'm appealing to you, don't do it. Yes, the minister will answer all the questions. But I have a right as the chairperson to comment, because if I have my own understanding of your questions, the minister and any other person can. The COSATU stance is in public. So we can't come here in the committee and say something different. Be that as it may, the minister will answer. Honorable Olodum.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also appreciate the report that has been presented to us. I just have two questions, Chair, and a comment. My first question is to say, is there a time frame for finalization of outstanding issues? The other one is, what will happen to instances where an employer would reduce the number of working hours because he or she is running away from paying according to the 40-45 hour determined working period? And then on the comment part is to say, the minister has indicated that this minimum wage is to be implemented by the 1st of May 2018 pending finalization of legislation. The only comment I want to make there is how I wish legislation will be worked on such that it does not tamper with the implementation date, because this debate has been on the table for quite some time. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Collins. Noted, Honorable Khawla.
Thank you, Chairperson. And Minister, welcome to the committee. It's been a while since we last saw you. In terms of the national minimum wage, I have a couple of questions. The first one is, you've given us a very good breakdown in the slides that we've had printed that entitled minimum wages coverage by wage regulation and collective bargaining. And you've listed for us a lot of the sectors that are currently below the national minimum wage. There are probably about 19 or 20 in total when you look at all the subdivisions and so on. And Minister, it's quite alarming when you look at this list. I read some of it out in Parliament during the Deputy President's question times, because it's very alarming that in some cases the national minimum wage is double what's being paid now. It's actually double. I'm, for one, don't believe that workers should be paid such low wages. But the problem is that in so many of these that you've listed for us and a few others that we could add, employers are going to have to double the wages. And I'm sure anybody with a little bit of knowledge of economics will know that to do that is going to result in job losses. It's just not... So it's not feasible to double so many thousands and maybe millions of workers' salaries without some being retrenched and lost. And as my colleague pointed out just now, We've lost 800,000 jobs in the last 2 years. So this is going to make the situation worse. And I asked the Deputy President a question about this in December in the National Assembly, and asked what Nedlac himself, yourself as a minister and so on, are going to do about the job losses. His response in the House was that there are definitely going to be job losses. He twice, in response to two different questions, said there are going to be job losses. But his caution was that it is necessary for Nedlac and himself and the department to look at ways of reducing those job losses. And he undertook to take that discussion to Nedlac to look for ways of reducing job losses. Now, I've had a look at your documents and the documents from Nedlac, and there is a line in the document that talks about the concern about job losses. It's point 15 on page 5 of the agreement signed on the 7th of February. And that point talks about fragile sectors and the need to avoid job losses, but it has absolutely no steps to be taken to prevent job losses. So my question to the Minister is around this problem. What steps has Nedlac indicated should be taken to reduce job losses? And can we hear a little bit about what those steps entail? Because so far what we've got is we've got three things that I'm aware of. We've got the domestic worker and farm workers or agricultural and forestry worker sectors, which are going to be given a slight lower wage initially. They don't have to comply with the national minimum wage, but they've got the 75% of the 90%, which you indicated. And then there is a statement that people can apply for exemptions. But it's very clear that every business, including all small and micro enterprises, every spaza shop, every taxi owner, every whatever else is going to have to comply with the 20 rand an hour and the approximately 3,500 a month. And Minister, with so many sectors, as you've indicated, being so far below that, it's not like they are at 19 rand an hour or so. It's as low as 9 rand, 10 rand. The blanket sector, which you've not indicated yet, is also affected within textiles. It's a subdivision of textiles. They're at, I think, 11 rand, 39 a sector, an hour. These are significant problems. And I don't see anywhere in the documents or in any feedback in the media or anywhere that an actual plan with steps is indicated to deal with these other sectors, like the textile sector, like, you know, I don't want to read the whole list, Madam Chair, but there's a whole list that the Minister has given to us. How are we going to deal with that? Because at the end of the day, that is the biggest worry. Is it not better to have a sectoralized approach where you can deal with those different sectors that are not going to cope, rather than forcing them to have a one-size-fits-all? Is there any engagement with those bargaining councils or with those sectors, workers and employers, to see what can be done in their sector? Because it's going to take a long time to process 19 different applications for major exemptions. I'm wondering what the thinking of Nedlac is, what the thinking of the Minister is, and how are we going to deal with those specific problems. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. Thank you, Honorable Ollis. Honorable Raula.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, we also welcome the presentation from the Minister. Chair, I've got some few areas that I wish I could lift. And one, the second part that the Minister was talking to about when he was doing the presentation, he referred to the rationale of the minimum wage. And I want to urge you strongly that the rationale is actually in contradiction with what has been presented to us here regarding the minimum wage. What I want to add is that the minimum wage should have always been set to accommodate the most vulnerable in the society. And unfortunately, that most vulnerable are the ones that are left hanging under the sectoral determination. So the argument is that the fact that you've got two parallel processes with regard to the issue of addressing inequalities in the country, which is a sectoral determination and now the minimum wage, it remains a serious contradiction. Because you should not be having two processes that are overlapping. Because minimum wage, as a point of departure, it's supposed to be elevating those that you consider as victims, vulnerable people. And unfortunately, when you talk about those people, you can't run away from farm workers. You can't run away from the domestic workers. And in fact, your phase in approach is talk about 75% closer to the minimum wage from the domestic workers. And the 90% phase in approach is basically appeasing your own guilt that you have failed those most vulnerable, which are unfortunately the domestic workers, and they are supposed to feel appeased by the virtue of 90%. And I can tell you, there is nothing which is a masterstroke to that phasing approach other than a confirmation that you have not been able to assist them. Because, as I'm saying, those remain the most vulnerable in the society. Again, in terms of your rationale, you are saying you want to strengthen the bargaining council, the bargaining process amongst workers. And sitting here, I don't see that is happening. Because already, if you go minister to the engineering sector, which is relatively better paying, you find many employers, because they want to escape the relatively better payment from that particular sector, some of them are running away from the engineering sector, going to the motor sector. They are applying to the motor bargaining council so that they can be licensed and be classified as falling under the motor sector. Because why? The motor sector pays relatively lower than the metal industry. Now, if they are bringing now the minimum wage to that, it's going to be a contradiction in the sense that those small engineering companies that were considering to go to the motor sector, one, they are going to stop in terms of employing more people so that they can escape the minimum wage. So it means if you are going to have more employment, you are going to have sectors that are going to stagnate in terms of employing people, so that they escape the very same liabilities that I'm talking about. You see, so in my view, is that it is not strengthening the bargaining council, other than it is reversing and obviously stagnating, to many respects. The second other thing, the presentation you have made, it's not telling us anything with regard to that minimum wage as to what's going to be the impact of it in terms of the Provident Fund and the Pension Fund of employees. Is it taking it into consideration? Because taking it into consideration is also going to assist you to tell you as to what is likely to be the take-home of those employees in terms of their gross, in terms of their net, or whether the issue of the Pension Fund and the Provident Fund has not been considered at all. I hear that you are talking about the adjustment and reviews. And I'm also curious to know, in terms of the panel, what has been the anticipation of the period of implementation of the minimum wage, or whether it remains open-ended until a consideration of that particular panel. On the exclusion, my interest, you are talking about that there's going to be amendments in the labor relations We have just had one now, even though there's still some pockets of non-compliance. But my interest is that what's going to happen to those employees that are regarded as temporary employees, you see, which even now they are still suffering the blood. But I'm just trying to check now, in terms of the minimum wage, what is going to be the expression regarding the temporary employment services workers? The last point, I want to check with regard to also the issue of COSATU. What is likely to be the significance or the implications should COSATU? Because I don't want to go around with the gossip of the public as to what is happening in the public. You have just reported to us that COSATU has not signed because of their own internal communication, communicate to their own constituency. Say their constituency comes out and say that don't sign. Are we likely not to implement the minimum wage or even the numbers of organized labor that have signed? Are we likely to proceed despite what COSATU will be saying? Just want to check what would be the impact should COSATU not sign. Thank you, Chair.
On what Honorable Khawla was saying, because the other hand, are you on what Honorable Khawla was saying?
Can I raise order, Chair?
No, wait. Is it a point of order? I'm not talking about you. There's someone who has his hand has been up, so I don't know if it's a point of order. Just want to hear.
Chair, mine is to clarify some issues.
I'm raising an order, Chair. You have given us an opportunity to ask questions from the minister.
Mm.
Honorable Luli is not the minister here.
Mm.
So can you please allow the minister to respond? Because you should not reduce this committee meeting as a caucus meeting of the ANC. She does not have the clarity of what we are asking. We are asking the clarity from the minister. Because it's going to be a problem now if she's going to respond to all of us on the basis of his own agitation with what we are raising. Please protect us.
No, you are protected, but if she has something to raise, which is a point of order, I can't stop Honorable anyone.
I'm saying to you, we are asking questions to the minister, not to her. Even if she's going to become the minister, she's not a minister now, can you allow the minister to answer the questions, please? I don't know. She must not say anything. She raised her own issues.
Chair, I remain a woman, so I'll ask the honourable member to say she, even if he feels I look like my father. The second one is to just to outline on procedural matters the stage at which we are with this process. In some of the input of Honorable Khawla, he created an impression that we are still questioning whether the national minimum wage is relevant or not. Whereas at this stage where we are, there is agreement. Processes are for the modalities of implementing the national minimum wage. So I think what needs to happen, let's
order, Chair.
On what
I'm
needs to be
order.
Implemented, not on whether it's relevant.
No, you are not.
Thank you,
it.
Chair.
Okay, Honorable Loliwe, I think let's allow us to make mistakes in the process, and the minister will make those clarities. But we understand, you know, I think our understanding of the process is not on the same level. Honorable.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
America.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. But two questions, Madam Chair. First being that the minister spoke about, and in terms of the agreements on the introduction of the minimum wage, is the hours of work. hours of work, being, you know, for those employees who, for circumstances beyond their control, like construction workers and other employees that may be affected by it, for circumstances beyond their control, are not able to comply with the 40-hour or 45-hour work week. I know in the construction sector where it drains, employees are not working, and in most instances they are not being paid, and hence this would make provision for that, the 4 hours. So my question is, in terms of employees who, whose earnings are largely based on commission, to what extent will they be sort of covered in terms of the minimum hours that they need to work, or is it still similar to the current dispensation, or has it been changed? And then the second question is the tiering of implementation for the vulnerable workers, as my colleague has stated, namely domestic workers and workers in the agricultural sector. Now, the 75% and the 90% implementation target after the introduction of the minimum wage, it's whether that percentage is pegged at the introductory level of the minimum wage, because as we know, that the agreement makes provision for the adjustment of the minimum wage, whether it will be after year one and after year two, that percentage should be sort of in alignment with the adjusted amount, or is it purely based on the introductory amount of 20 rand per hour. And then lastly, Madam Chair, is the assessment of the socioeconomic impact assessment of the minimum wage can only be deducted after its implementation. So if it is discovered and through the assessment and research that there had been unintended consequences of the implementation of the minimum wage for reasons that is maybe too high, whatever, is there an opportunity, or is there a possibility that should the unintended consequences and the socioeconomic impact assessment be so severe on jobs that the national minimum wage will be lowered? Or is it an non-negotiable that it starts at 20 rand and it will be annually adjusted, and come hell or high, we will just shoulder on, and no matter the jobs bloodbath that may result, speculation of course, we will go ahead. And then finally, the unilateral adjustment of contracts of employment and hours of work. So we know in terms of the current Labour Relations Act, there's this provision for recourse if there's unilateral adjustment of conditions of employment and hours of work. In terms of this agreement, non-compliance of it will be an unfair labour practice, for sure. So obviously it would become a bargaining matter, and where that and then one small last comment is the exemptions that is envisaged for employees, particularly SMMEs. I think that the regulations should be very clear in terms of what acts would constitute an exemption so that it cannot be applied selectively and arbitrary, so that, you know, when people apply for exemptions, they know that they must fulfill these criteria before exemptions will be granted. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable America. Honorable Fons Kalfik.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is with regards to the SMMEs and the startup businesses. I need the Minister to elaborate more in terms of the incentive schemes that will be offered as per the agreement. And when looking at the socioeconomic impact assessment, it's stating that it will be done. Can we have a clear framework or time frame in terms of the finalization of that SIA? And when looking at the tiering in terms of the introduction of the minimum wage, is stating the agriculture and domestic sectors, but when looking at the current lowest minimum wages in terms of the bargaining councils, we'll find that in terms of hairdressing and furniture, those kind of sectors where you find way below the current the proposed minimum wages, about 6 rand 11 and 9 rand 8. Are they not considering also a tiering factor in terms of those sectors in order to help that we don't have a lot of employers applying for exemptions and things like that, or we don't have job losses in those sectors based on the non-affordability by the employers? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Loliwe, you are very much pretty. Even if you can't see the rest of your body, we just see your head. We know that you are related. So rest assured. And Minister, on this issue of COSATU, I don't think there's gossip, but I think COSATU was out there speaking on itself. What is in public is what COSATU has said, not only on newspapers, but COSATU spoke exactly on what you are saying. There's nothing that is a gossip, but the answers that are required by members, we hope that you will answer as much as you can. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Firstly, let me just start with the COSATU issue. I want to say I can't give the assurance on behalf of COSATU, but as I said, all federations have agreed on the national minimum wage. They have agreed on the accord, and they have agreed on the declaration. And we are waiting for COSATU to sign, probably after their meeting today, because we're told that their CEC will start on Monday the 27th and finished on the 1st. So we hope they will come back and sign, because that's what they said. So, but I can't give the assurance on that one. But to link with the issue that was raised by Honorable Khaula, whether we will continue if COSATU has signed or not. Based on the agreement, the majority have signed, and therefore we will continue with the process. Now, Chairperson, on the other issues, in particular the trainees and learnerships, when you look at the current situation, in most cases, particularly those who are in learnerships and those who are doing practical work, in most cases they are being given stipends, of which I do believe that they will be even able to contribute towards the unemployment and the compensation. Because in terms of the law, if you recall, there were amendments, even on the Unemployment Insurance Act, that those who are doing practical work, since they also contribute in production and therefore they must be paid and they must also contribute so that they can be protected. And on those who can't afford, because most of the members have raised the same issue but in different ways, as we speak, we do have the legislation that allows the exemptions. So everybody must follow that process when it comes to the application to be exempted. But also they must also produce the evidence that they can't afford. Because some of them, they will say, we can't afford while they can. So they have to submit proper documentation so that you can see whether they really won't afford to pay the national minimum wage. And we have also agreed, all of us, we have made a commitment, particularly employers through business. I must say, when we talk about organized business, even small businesses were represented, and they are part and parcel of the agreement. And it was agreed that no employer will retrench on the basis of the implementation of the national minimum wage. Is there on the accord? I think when the members go through that, they will find that a commitment. But also, Chairperson, I just want to say, even the small business development was participating as well as that particular portfolio on behalf of government, but at the same time, they had made sure that their members through a business, they are also there so that they can also participate. And therefore, let us agree, all of us, just want to assure the members that small businesses were part and parcel, and also the NGOs through the community constituency, they were represented. So all of them are part and parcel of the agreement, and we have agreed that all stakeholders must go back and report to their constituencies about the agreement so that they can look at how are they going to adjust and adapt to the national minimum wage. And on the other issues, we have even made a commitment through the Treasury that there will be incentives for those who are in dire need, but also they must prove that they really qualify for those incentives. Particularly, if you recall, honorable members, there are incentives on job creation where the Treasury says, if you say you are going to create so many jobs, in terms of the tax incentives, they can get so much. So it's one of those issues that we said it should be considered, and that was put in by the Treasury. But it was further agreed that we need to look at other incentives. And we said all the stakeholders must come up with the proposal. As we were aware that, for example, we were even saying to organized labor, are you saying now you will support the tax incentives? Are you going to support the youth wage subsidy? And they said, well, we have to consider some of those incentives. So it's part of the process to look at those particular incentives. In terms of the time frames for the outstanding issues, we have said they must be finalized within 4 months so that we can be able to factor in some of the amendments, but we won't wait for them because we have to process the legislation. But during the period when there will be public hearings, then that's when probably they can factor in that one. The legislation has been drafted. and we said we need to give the legal people to finalize it so that we can be able, therefore, to request the cabinet to give us an opportunity to publicize it for public comments, so that we can be able also, if possible, to go back to cabinet if there are no further amendments, or if there are minor amendments on that legislation, then to request cabinet to submit it to parliament. And I think that's when we'll be able to take some of the members on all the amendments in all those legislation to say these are the real amendments when we formally brief the portfolio committees. We have also agreed that the Department of Labor, through the Labor Market and Industrial Relations, should start to have discussions with the bargaining councils on the agreed principles on the national minimum wage, so that they can deal with those particular issues. When it comes to the issue of 75% and 90% of both the domestic and farm workers, we were looking at the situations currently, and if you look at the current situation and also look at who are the employers, particularly in the domestic sector, that's why we're saying we should also consider not to come up with something that will also destroy the sectors at the same time. So that's why we have agreed on the phased-in approach. And I must say, all the sectors, through the federations, we're represented, because we're saying they have to consult before we take a final decision on this matter. That's why it took so long for us to finalize some of the issues. So we believe that, because we have said this 75% and 90% of the national minimum wage should be implemented within 2 years. Beyond that, everybody must comply. We're looking at the current situation right now, because some of these workers, they are also, particularly the domestic sector, they are also employed by the very same people who fall within the categories of the vulnerable workers. And Chairperson, also some of the domestic workers as well fall within the bargaining sector. So that is why we're saying, when you look at the national minimum wage, is to strengthen the collective bargaining, because we're not taking out the role of the bargaining councils. Bargaining is going to continue, and those that are at a higher level, they are going to continue with that minimum wage that has been agreed upon. But we're saying those that are less than the minimum wage should be adjusted to that particular level of the national minimum wage. And this strengthen the collective bargaining by saying nobody in South Africa should earn less than the national minimum wage, precisely because that person is not covered in terms of the national minimum wage. So I think if we take it from that spirit, those who are not organized are going to benefit on this one. But at the same time, when you will be dealing with the amendments, you will clearly understand why are we amending certain clauses. But I can't say it today, because we need to formalize it first, then we'll come and brief the portfolio committee. Because at the same time, we're still going to have the public hearings. In terms of what we have agreed, particularly there was a time when we talk about the balloting before and when the employers have put something on the table, and finally it was agreed that no, they only agreed with the issues of balloting before they go on strike. And secondly,
Minister, you know, some members are sleeping, and when they wake up, they will not know if you have answered their questions. And I can see everybody, and those who are going to repeat the questions, you will not repeat.
And then, I think, Chairperson, they are consulting with their ancestors. What Chairperson we have done, we have even put in terms of the agreement, if you go through the codes and everything, where we are saying the issue of the extension after the bargaining agreement, it should not now affect whether the employers were the majority or the workers were the majority. If, for example, the retail sector is negotiating, let's say ShopRite, it should not therefore be a situation where you say you only extend to those who are members of the unions. If the agreement is on the ShopRite, it should, all ShopRite workers should be paid at the same level. So that is how we are strengthening the collective bargaining, is one of the issues. Of course, the workers have to contribute to the pension or provident fund, and also to the unemployment insurance, together with their employers, and also the employers contribute, by the way, to both pension and provident fund, and also to also contribute to the compensation fund as part of the social protection of the workers. So we can't therefore allow a situation where we're saying workers should not contribute. They have to, because at the end of the day, when they retire, they must have something that they can be looked after through that particular issue. On the issues of temporary workers, the temporary workers, in terms of the current legislation, all workers are protected from day one. But we're saying if those workers have been recruited by the temporary employment agency, they will be in their books, but they will be paid according to the permanent worker who is there, and therefore they will be contributing. All the benefits are going to be benefited by all the workers, and they're also included on the national minimum wage. In terms of those workers who are paid on commission, as I was saying, Chairperson, when you introduce the national minimum wage, it says no worker should be paid less than 20 rands an hour in South Africa. Whether the commission is going, of course the commission must continue, because it's part of that, but they must be paid the national minimum wage. And in terms of the socio-economic assessment, yes, it was done by all the researchers, and including the panel of experts. They have indicated that based on the socio-economic challenges at this particular time, this is what they recommend. But we have gone through all the research reports, including the research that was done by the Treasury. But I must say to the Honorable Member, that report that was saying we can lose 700,000 jobs, it was based on the demand then, when we have not finalized, that was the demand by the workers and the constituency. And that is why we said we need research to be done, so that it can indicate if we are at a certain level, what will happen. And also it was based on the median wage that is being done in South Africa. And therefore, based on all those issues, that is why we have come up with the compromise position that says let all the workers be protected at this particular level, And currently, there was no indication that there are going to be lots of jobs that will be lost by the workers. Thank you, Chairperson.
To add to what the Minister has indicated, I mean, the panel of experts looked at the implementation of the national minimum wage. And they did a benchmark internationally, and they looked at the impact of the national minimum wage and in as far as job losses is concerned. And they, in their report, they're making a statement that says that in all the countries that they've looked at, the impact on jobs has been very minimal. We do understand that South Africa is different, and if you look at the state of our economy currently, we're not in a position to have a national minimum wage that is set at a level which is higher than what we have set. However, we could not have set it at a level which is lower than what we have set, because it would then have defeated the whole purpose of an attempt by government to deal with the issue of the wage inequality in South Africa. So we have to start somewhere, and we understand that there are a number of factors that we had to take into consideration. At least what we're happy about, Chairperson and the Honourable Members, is that the work that we've done has not been as a result of a process where a thought-through process was not followed. This is a research-based kind of or evidence-based kind of outcome, where every factor was taken into consideration, and I think the committee makes the panel makes a statement in their report that says, having looked at all the factors, the socio-economic condition of the workers that are earning far less than 20 rands per hour outweighs every other consideration or every other factor that they looked at. If you think that domestic workers are more vulnerable than any other worker, spare a thought for that hairdresser, that person who works in the saloon, in the hairdressing saloon, who earns 6 rand 11 cents, and the domestic worker earns 11 rand 31 cents. So if I were to choose as to who should I lift, I would most definitely look at the person who works in a hairdressing salon, whose salary whose wages is 6 rand 11 cents an hour. So we've looked at all these things, and we've considered that, of course, when you introduce something, it may have a negative impact. But at this stage, it's all, it's all a speculation. We think this is what is going to happen. We think that we're going to have more than 700 job losses. But if you go and look at when we started introducing sectoral determinations in the country and look at the job losses, you will realize that we have not had a bloodbath. And even those sectors that were perceived to be sectors that are not going to be able to adjust, they actually adjusted far more better than they were expected. And the point that the minister is raising is that we have put mechanisms in place to be able to reduce the impact to all the sectors. The exemptions that we spoke about, but they will require that a company, if you are applying for an exemption, you must declare all your financials, so that when we sit and consider your application, we must be satisfied that indeed you cannot afford. And on the basis of that, we'll make a decision in terms of whether we grant you an exemption. And it cannot be a perpetual exemption. It has to be an exemption for a year. So I just wanted to add those few things to the responses that the minister has raised. The last point is the issue of strengthening collective bargaining. The way the labor laws are structured in South Africa, there are two basic tenets. One is that government sets the floor of rights. Secondly, that there's going to be strong collective bargaining system. Now, our responsibility as government is to set the floor of rights. And we are no way saying that this minimum wage is a living wage. It's a minimum wage, like we're saying. So we're complying with what is expected of us as government. What we expect, though, is that trade unions and employers, they must now engage and say, we want to improve that which has been put on the table. And when we say we want to strengthen collective bargaining, we're saying, if we, as government, if we set the national minimum wage to be at a level closer to a living wage, we would be doing the work of the unions. And we have no intentions of doing that. And that is why we're saying collective bargaining is a way to achieve a living wage. Our responsibility is to set the minimum, and that's what the process was all about. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Lamati has highlighted the difference between the current sectorial wage between hairdressing, the hairdressing industry and the domestic industry. And for me, therein lies the contradiction, Madam Chair, is that if we find ourselves in a very unique situation in South Africa where a large proportion of people working within the domestic industry sector are employed by ordinary working South Africans. They're not employed by employers that qualify, like in the hairdressing sector, for all sorts of taxation benefits, and because those ordinary families are not regarded as employers, but they have to fulfill with all the legislation that all other employers have to comply with. So if a working family are unable to comply with the minimum wage, would that particular employer, in parentheses, be considered for exemptions? And would that particular employer, for lack of a better definition, because they're not regarded as employers, be then told that, listen, you have to take your, you have to end your subscription of the DSTV, you have to take your child out of this expensive school and put it in a more inexpensive school so that you can comply with the national minimum wage. So, in conclusion, Madam Chair, when will ordinary families who are considered as employers by the state benefit from taxation rebates or whatever arrangement is there so that it could mitigate the impact of a national minimum wage on them? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Colleagues.
Thanks, Chairperson. Minister, I listened carefully to your responses and to your original presentation, and you referred to a clause in the agreement which says that it is illegal to dismiss somebody because you can't afford the national minimum wage. Now, I've looked through these documents, all the ones that you've sent us, and the only clause that's similar that I can find is the one that says, no employer may unilaterally alter downwards conditions of employment and hours of work. Doesn't say in that clause that you can't dismiss somebody because you can't afford to pay the national minimum wage. So I don't know if there's a clause somewhere that I've missed. Perhaps I could be guided by the minister into which page or which clause it is that says that you can't dismiss somebody, because I can't find it anywhere. Secondly, Chairperson, the Minister said that the declaration has been signed or agreed to at least by all the role players. In the declaration on wage inequality and labour market stability, there's a clause 3.4.3 which specifically says secret balloting prior to a strike as part of a trade union and employer organisation's constitutions. Is the Minister saying that COSATU has now finally signed this document and agreed to secret balloting prior to a strike? It was my understanding that they were quibbling about this, that they weren't happy about it. Can we just get clarity that has COSATU actually signed agreement to this document and that particular clause 3.4.3, so we can just get some clarity on that particular aspect? Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. Just an interesting one. A panel of experts had initially said that small businesses would have a run-in of 12 months or 24 months. They were discussing that. That seems to have been dropped unilaterally. I'm not sure what actually took place. Maybe you can share with us what happened there. Thanks.
Thank you, Minister. Three questions.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think if then that's not in the document on the questions of the employers not retrenching the workers based on the implementation of the national minimum wage, I think we can get that particular, because there are also other documents that we're using, and I think I will forward it to you, Chairperson, so that you can share with the members. I think the document, Virgil, that was agreed upon and by the task teams that were submitted on the committee of principals, where the members have agreed on them. The issue of the SMEs, it was discussed by the task team at NEDLEC and also agreed by the committee of principals. So it was not dropped unilaterally. And on the issue of balloting, as I've said, everybody has agreed on it. So that is why it is part of the agreement, and therefore all the issues that I didn't highlight as outstanding issues, all of them, they were agreed upon them. So whether COSATU will sign or not, but they have agreed on that particular issue. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, members. Honorable, your question?
my question has not been responded to.
Can you remind us the question?
The question
of domestic workers and the head salon.
Precisely, no, the question was in terms of domestic workers, the majority are employed by ordinary working people, whether they would also be sort of considered for exemptions, and by when will those employees be afforded the tax benefits that the hairdressing salon, for example, enjoys with regard to the employees.
DJ?
Thank you, Chair. There's nothing at all that excludes the employers of domestic workers from applying for an exemption. And there's absolutely nothing also that precludes them from applying for an incentives if they think that they cannot afford. But I would like to stress the point that one of the issues that they will have to share with the department is their income and whether indeed they cannot afford. So if they can give us that declaration, we will consider it just like we will be considered that.
I think it's clear now. Any more questions, members? Honourable Bakri.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's one that obviously begs the question. We're going to have hundreds and thousands of more disputes. I presume the Minister has looked at giving the CCMA and the bargaining councils a lot more money for more arbitrators, conciliators. I reckon this, and again, it's surmised, but I reckon we're going to have 15 to 20% more disputes than they've actually got at the moment. We're going to also need a hell of a lot more inspectors, because our inspectors can't get through even to 5% of the business community at this stage. Can you imagine trying to implement this? And maybe the Minister wants to comment on it.
Honourable Ollis. Chairperson, it's on another topic. I just want to know, I'm finished with this one. I'm on another topic, so if you want to finish this, it's fine.
Minister.
Thank you very much. We know that we don't have enough budget to employ the inspectors, but we are going to look at other options on how we can move with the employment of the inspectors, particularly when it comes to the issues of enforcement of legislation. We also have indicated some of the options, in particular in relation to align it with the treasury regulations, whether we can look at the options of saying how do we link the issues of a SARS certificate vis-a-vis the compliance certificate with labor. So those are the options that we can consider, and they will be starting the processes of negotiations with the Treasury and SARS. Thank you.
Any more questions on national minimum wage? I think we have concluded. Thank you so much, Minister. I think the committee has noted your hand. The committee will be in a better position to engage and also come up with its pronouncements. We will be in a position. Chair, let's look at these changes of next week. Let's look at this program before we start with the... with this presentation, we might come up with something different. Do we agree?
Yeah.
Okay. Because Honorable Bakhlin is saying yes, Zolan, just let's talk about the changes, the program, the challenges of Wednesday, of Friday. And then I think a member will also tell us about, Honorable Franziska Gleckweg, you'll say something on the training, and then we'll take it from there. Sorry, members of the team, it will be too short.
Thank you, Chair. Just shortly on the program for Friday, parliamentary program has indicated that they will be now celebrating 20th anniversary of the Constitution and the establishment of the NCOP. And that will start at 9 o'clock. So therefore, what the committee had planned for Friday might fall away because of that parliamentary program, Chair. Thank you. That's all I wanted to bring to the attention of the committee for now.
The Friday program, the third, is not going to be possible because of the joint committee. Okay? Honorable Van Skalvik.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have been informed late last night that the training schedule is postponed until April. So which means that members will be available who were supposed to be on the training for the next 2 weeks. So I would therefore propose that we try and use those 2 dates, the 2 Wednesdays. Thank you.
Then members, are we comfortable to, will you have problems if we then, there's no way that we can sit on Friday, whether we want or we don't want. Then it means that the agenda for Wednesday, which was going to be the researchers and the doll, let's talk about that. Honorable Lolio.
Chair, I'm looking at today's program and what I proposed initially. I have felt that DOL has utilized funds to transport people to the UN. So it may be, in a way, inconvenient for us to say we are taking the presentation on national minimum wage up. So I wanted to concretely propose, why don't we then take the presentations by the department and end for today? Then next week we'll have a presentation from our researchers, and also as a committee we wrap up this issue of the national minimum wage on the 8th. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Khawule.
Chair, I understand I might have entered after you have greeted people, but my understanding from the last meeting was that on the 8th and the 15th, we were open. If I can just get clarity there, if maybe there's been a change after your greetings.
But you were here, and not focusing, you know, because Honorable Van Skalvik was talking to that, but she can repeat that part for you. The Wednesday or what? Yeah? Honorable Loliwa, can you assist? Yes.
Chair, I request the honorable members to listen this time around. What I indicated is that we've received communication late last night that the training that was scheduled for the 6th until the 16th is postponed until April, which means that on the 8th and the 15th, we will be available. Thank you.
Now, this opposition caucus now during committee is not on. Oh, okay. So then do we act, there's a concrete proposal that says let's deal with the department because the department is here instead of saying they must go away, they have paid. And then next Wednesday, we can then deal with the researchers, with that report of researchers. But also that will give us time, members. We have listened to what the minister is saying. We have the package from NetLeg. So that, and Cindy, you have also circulated your report. Your report. So on that Wednesday, we will wrap up and close as the committee and be able to pronounce as the committee what is our take on national minimum wage. So I hope that parties will not say we are going back to consult because you have all the documents with you. You've heard the minister, you know what Cindy is going to present, and then that will be our last day, and then we can then continue with other issues. Honorable Ollis?
Chair, if you can just clarify what you're going to ask us to vote on so that we have got this week to just consult our caucuses. What specifically? Is it a specific document you're going to ask us to agree to, or is it a specific policy or proposal or the specific thing? Because then I will get a mandate to vote.
You know, there is nothing specific. We only vote when we don't agree because there is the national minimum wage is already there. It has been signed for. As Parliament, Committee of Parliament, we have not said anything, whether we support and agree, or those are issues now that we will be discussing when we meet on Wednesday after the report from Usindi, because we have to pronounce as the committee, not as parties really, but because the committee has not yet set and engaged. Even myself, I can talk on the ANC, but I can't say we can support, but to say we agree or not agree, or we want to, anything that will come up with that day. So that's what you should be going back and consult, because we have everything in front of you. The minister is yours here. I don't think there's nothing much more that you are going to get after that package, the NetLeg package, and what she has said. Honorable Ollis.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm still not clear. We're going to meet next Wednesday,
yes.
And you're going to ask us to agree to something. What is it you're going to ask us to agree to? Because that's the thing I need to ask my caucus. I don't know what the thing
can
is.
Can somebody assist me? All of you members don't understand. Okay, no, but I expected that. Honorable Loliwe.
Chair, my understanding is that we went for public hearing. We received some information. NetLeg rolled out their own process and they came to a particular conclusion. So I think as a committee, what we are expected to do is to look at the summary of the processes we undertook as a committee and say between the two processes, this is what NetLeg is saying and this is what we received from our processes. But when we face reality, which option is going to take the process forward of the two? I think that's what we are supposed to be doing next week.
I think, Honorable, that's what we'll be doing. Because we need to say something, we need to pronounce on as the committee on what NetLeg has put forward. If we, it's no, both. You see, ours, the NetLeg has pronounced, they have made a proposal of 3.5. You see? So we can't be quiet because there's a proposal there. as the committee, we need to come out and say, we support or we reject on the basis of this, or we support on the basis of this, what has come up. We will take into consideration, as Honorable Loliwe is saying, all our own experiences as we go about. And then we come up, if we want to come up with something different, we can also do that. But if we reject or we support, we come up, because if you reject and or we amend anything that will come up with as the committee on that document. Honorable Ollis.
Thank you.
So what, just to be 100% sure, because I don't want to reach Wednesday and then have a drama, I want to try and make it easy and clear. What you're asking is that we as a committee consider the proposals by NEDLAC and the documents and decide whether we agree or whether we think changes are necessary. That's what you're asking me. I can ask my caucus about that. That I can do.
You can agree, you can support, we can amend it, but it's our right because we will have that time now. And we can't say we are going back. We know these things. We have that document. Agreed. Okay. Can we listen to the department now on that report? You know, when we went on public hearings in Northern Cape, we were... Northern Cape? Oh, sorry, not public hearings. When we went on oversight to the Northern Cape, we were with the department in every site that we visited. And there are issues that we have noted, and we've asked the department to follow in all those areas. So that's what we want to get from them. We will also be taking... going on a study tour again, on oversight, on textile industries. If you are ready with that one, because we still have time, you can give us the report on just take us through on what we should expect as we go around in these textile industries. If you are ready, you can do that. But what we need urgently now, because we can see that you have your people from different, someone from the Northern Cape. Let's hear what is that the department has done with the issues that were raised by workers in front of you in all these different sites. So that's what we'll be doing. But and we'll do it later. Oh, we are revising this program now. I think we have agreed. Let's adopt this revised program, members. Honorable America is proposing for adoption. Honorable
Chairperson, when we look at the week of the 22nd, we've agreed that we're going to do oversight in Western Cape, but I just want to bring to the attention of the committee that the 21st is a public holiday, and we know that we're having usually problems with flights in some areas. We don't have flights. So I would, therefore, when proposing to adopt the program with the amendment also that we start at least by 11 or half past 11 with the oversight visits of the 22nd. Thank you.
Members, there's a proposal. It's in the Western Cape in any case. Yeah, it's agreed. So the, yes, adopted. DG?
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to ask Ms. Broncos to just take us through the process. The one on the oversight in the Northern Cape.
Chairperson, thank you. Honourable members, good morning. The Word document was circulated to the committee secretariat, so this is a summary thereof, which I'm going to take you through. If we can look at the next slide, please. Thank you. It is just the introduction that you had an oversight visit 14 to 16 September last year, and that you visited the province to execute your constitutional mandate. I think we must go back, we must go to the background. You performed the constitutional oversight role in a number of workplaces, and inspections were done in terms of the BCEA, the sectoral determination for farm workers, occupational health and safety, as well as the Unemployment Insurance Act and the Unemployment Insurance Contributions Act. Now, the first workplace that the farm that the committee visited was Tirisanu Farm, which is about 30 km outside of Upington. It is a grape farm, and you were there when the workers were busy pruning and preparing the vines. If we look at the next slide, there were quite a number of findings at this workplace, and I think this was one of the workplaces that also raised definite unhappiness amongst the members of the committee in terms of the conditions of which the workers experienced in this particular workplace. So I'm going to summarize the findings that we had during our inspections. Firstly, in terms of the BCEA, that the employer was found not to be in compliance with the sectoral determination in respect of the following, clause 6, which is informing concerning the pay, which is the payslip information. It was found to be contravention in this clause as payslips did not reflect the actual overtime, and an undertaking was secured to have this corrected. Clause 22, which was sick leave, which is the 36 days in the 3-year cycle, 5 days per week for workers who work 5 days a week, and so on. In terms of the contract of employment and the practice, an undertaking was also secured here, not to request a medical certificate for a day or two, or after a weekday or public holiday. So the employer wanted a medical certificate for every absence of illness, and that was a contravention. Then section 31, the keeping of records, the attendance register by employees. There was also a contravention of this, as there was no proper record keeping for the employees' daily attendance, and undertaking was also secured for that. Clause 8, there were quite a number of transgressions in terms of the BCEA. Deductions, apart from the statutory requirements in terms of Unemployment Insurance Contributions Act, money was also deducted what it deemed to be shop and accommodation. The money deducted for the shop was grocery items bought by the employer on behalf of the employee when they go to town, which is, I think, a practice which happens on more farms than just this one. Based on the interviews conducted with the employees, they give them the employer a list to buy things on their behalf, and then would provide them with a till slip to reflect the cost of the grocery, and in turn they would give permission to the money deducted. The sectoral determination does not prohibit this to take place. In terms of Clause 8, which states the deduction of any goods purchased by the employee must specify the nature and quantity of goods and the amount that correlates with proof of purchase. The money being deducted for accommodation is less than 10% of their wages. The deductions is not allowed because the units do not conform to the basic criteria of having a leak-proof roof, electricity supply, and so forth. A written undertaking was secured in respect of the above-mentioned contraventions. Proof of compliance in respect of the undertaking was received on 24 October 2016, and this was proof of compliance to all the undertakings for BCEA. The BCEA file is therefore deemed to be closed, as there was compliance. Then let us look at the inspection in terms of occupational health and safety at this farm. The following was noted during the inspection. The employer has identified all the hazards that were prevalent in the workplace. Health and safety representatives were appointed and trained. Employees have been provided with personal protective equipment, taking into account the hazards that they encountered in the workplace. Employees handling chemicals have received training and provided with personal protective equipment. First aid person was available. Employees have been inducted in safe working procedures. Employees have been trained on emergency procedures. However, the employer has not provided sanitary facilities to the employees, and the firefighting equipment was not placed in the strategic location. And from what I'm informed, particularly the issue of the sanitary facilities was horrific.
Then we issued, if we can move to the next slide. Okay, that's the correct one, thank you. A contravention notice was issued in terms of the provision of the sanitary facilities and environmental regulations for workplaces in terms of the firefighting equipment. The employer has been given 60 days and he has secured sanitary facilities for the employees and the firefighting equipment has been provided. Then the inspection on this workplace in terms of the Unemployment Insurance Act. Verification was done between the payroll report and the employee's declarations report to test if the employer had registered its employees for UI. And it was noted that all employee samples were registered. However, according to the database, it was noted that the employer failed to submit declarations of its employees to the department on a monthly basis, as is required by the UI Contributions Act. The next slide then will talk about the Contributions Act. The employer pays contributions to SARS on a monthly basis. However, the latest proof and the latest proof of contribution was obtained to verify this, as well as the pay slips that were used to verify that the employer deducts the correct amount and pays over the correct amount to SARS, and that was indeed found to be correct. But an undertaking was secured for the employer to submit the outstanding declarations of the employees I spoke to about earlier, the ones that were not declared on a monthly basis. We have given the employee undertaking to make sure that he declares all employees that were working at that workplace for the preceding 4 years. After the follow-up visit, the employer was served with a compliance order following the failure, so he did not adhere to the undertaking for the UI Contributions Act, and we therefore had to issue a compliance order, which subsequently the employer has complied to in terms of submitting all the outstanding declarations. So that takes care of Tirasano Farm. I will now move to the next, which was Walker Industries or Iveco and waste recycling.
Just before you get to the other one. Members, the presenter is reading all what we have. Why don't we go to what they have done? Because I think our interest is not the findings. The findings were there. Because looking at this, the way this is done is going word by word, sentence by sentence, and there are a number of things, and we have this document. We want to know what is that you have done, what is outstanding to what you have done. But tell us which one. If we all agree.
Thank you for that, Chairperson. The next employer that I'm going to talk about then would be Walker and Iveco and the waste recycling plant. The employer was found to be in contravention, as you all know. So what we have done is we have issued a written undertaking to this employer, which they have failed to submit proof of compliance. And the matter has been referred on the 1st of February for prosecution. Chairperson, if I summarize now too much, then you'll also call me to order and say I'm summarizing too much. Then the next workplace that we're talking about is still the same workplace. The employer was complying with, there were quite a number of contraventions in terms of the Occupational Health and Safety Act, as you will recall. The employer complies with the areas contained in the notice, which were the facilities regulation, which was the provision of safeguarding of personal effects, the environmental regulations, and the general safety regulations. But that's all. And all the others are outstanding and prosecution will be recommended for this particular employer. You will appreciate that quite some time has had to run in terms of the prescripts of the law. So because of the failure of the employer now, we will continue with prosecution in terms of all the other outstanding matters in terms of occupational health and safety. The Unemployment Insurance Act and the Unemployment Contributions Act, there were outstanding declarations, as you will recall, and the employer has since complied to the undertaking that was issued and issued all that that was required in terms of the written undertaking. Sulfura salt.
Tell us about the man who was injured there, who was beaten by the employer there. And when we were there, there were lots of stories. And the case could not continue, and we've asked the department to follow that.
Chairperson, if you will allow me to request the head of the province to respond to that particular question, Mr. Albani is here, that he can respond to that particular question.
Thanks, Chairperson. Specifically in terms of the case referred to, it's Mr. I'm just trying to get the document here. It's Mr. Thomas Tuyeni, who's been working there for more than 25 years. And based on the investigation that we conducted, Chairperson, we were able to establish that the alleged assault took place in March 2016. And the matter was reported to the police. There were also medical records. But what subsequently happened, Chairperson, was that we were presented with some kind of a settlement. Which it was then alleged it was a settlement between the employee who was assaulted and the manager at CCMA. When the inspector spoke to the employee, he indeed confirmed that the matter has been settled between the two, and it was indeed referred to the CCMA. There is a report to that effect. In fact, the meeting with the two was on the 1st of December 2016, where both parties confirmed such.
Yes, members, there's the report. Okay, Honorable Bahrain, I've noted your hand, Honorable Tongana, on this matter. Okay, please.
I'm just a little bit shocked that how do you settle a criminal matter between the two parties, in other words, a complainant and an aggressor, when in fact the state is the true complainant. So I'm not sure how that actually happened. I'm intrigued. I've been practicing law for 35 years. I've never seen that happen. Maybe you can just share with us how it happened. Thanks.
Thank you. Honorable Tongwan.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to find out as to what kind of settlement did the assaulted employee and the employer get into, and to further check if the assaulted person is back at work or not. Yeah?
All right, Chairperson, in terms of the settlement, at the time when we, let me just get the series of events correctly, Chair. The case was reported on the 29th of March 2016. And at the same time, on the 12th of April 2016, the employee was charged by the employer for dereliction of duty, but those are issues that, it's misconduct that happened at the workplace. So part of the settlement was not necessarily related to the assault, but to issues that happened at the workplace. Now, when the inspectors went to him to say, why are you not proceeding with the case? Because according to the investigating officer, the matter was settled between the two parties and therefore they were not proceeding. Then he also felt, because he wanted to secure his job, he felt that the matter has been settled between the two of them. However, the CCM, is not necessarily related to the alleged assault, but to misconduct that happened at the workplace that relates to the work.
Transcript: does that imply the criminal case is still on? Because I don't find the logic. Sometimes when a person is withdrawing a case, the state continues on its own, because an assault did happen there, and it was too serious, according to us, as people who visited there. So was it only because there was some settlement on other matters that they resolved that that settlement is going to affect even the criminal case?
You know what I want to suggest, DJ? We remember this case word by word. All the people have spoken there, the men who have assaulted. We were told that man can't work anymore. He suffered from a back, whatever, problem. We were told that the case was not well attended by CCMA. We were told that the case could not continue, the criminal case, with the police. We know that that's not your call, but your call is to check how, where is that man, because that man got sick as a result of the assault, not as a result of all these other things that were told are internal, but he got bedridden because of that. And we want to know if all the processes that the department has, that the, and the benefits and everything that have to take place, have taken place. But also a case like that, we will have to follow, I don't know who must follow, but if we have the case number, I think as well we have to follow up, because we're told that that case is not, I mean, the person who was reporting this case, they told us the employers were in cahoots with the police and the Department of Labor. So I don't think this case has been investigated yet. We want to give it to your capable hands so that you give us proper report. Honorable Bahri.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with the Honorable Olewa. And in fact, what you've just said, but I think I'd like to go one step further. I'd like to get a report from the prosecution as to whether they've withdrawn the actual prosecution or not, and why. Because assault is horrific. You can't agree that, don't worry, I'll hit you back, and now we've got a settlement. That doesn't work like that, not in a modern state. The other thing is, maybe the department is within their purview. They can tell us whether the Workman's Compensation Commissioner claim has been put in and settled, and what was it that was paid, and especially if the man can't work, we need to know whether that was actually sorted out. We presume that it's such a high-profile case now amongst this committee that it would have been settled by now, so they can let us have that report. And also, finally, one doesn't know what pressure was brought to bear upon an employee in a remote area such as that, to try and settle a case. It's like any other case where you say, I'm now living in this particular area, and now people have put pressure and say, take 10,000 rand and shut up, or else. I have a suspicion there might be something like that. So it's a worry for me in particular, but I'm sure the Honourable Oliwe is worried likewise. Thank you, Madam Chair.
DG, we leave it in your capable hands. We leave Honorable, you see, Honorable Loli, these members of DA, the other, at some stage you will be with Honorable Oli, see, and at some stage it's Honorable Bahrain, because you are so pretty. Let's then go to another one.
Thank you, Chairperson. The next one then would be Sol Pura Salt, which was the next workplace that was visited. There was an improvement notice issued to the employer in terms of personal protective equipment, and he was given 60 days to comply with the contravention notice. He has issued the personal protective equipment, so he's complying in terms of the areas which notices were issued for. The outstanding issue there is the exposure to dust, and the employer is currently busy addressing that matter. So he has appointed people, according to our information, to address technical experts to address the matter. The next workplace is Urania Rafir Wine Cellar. In terms of basic conditions of employment, the employer had underpayment of staff up to the 6th of October 2015. We have issued a written undertaking there and proof of the compliance to this undertaking that the people were indeed paid the outstanding wages, or the underpaid wages, was received in October last year, and the file has been subsequently closed. In terms of occupational health and safety, a number of improvement notices were issued in terms of visibility of the cellars, as well as to prevent the tripping hazards in the harvesting cellar, that they had to deal with piping and so forth. And also the employer has provided proof, and we were there to see that indeed they have done what they had to do in terms of the improvement notices. So there's compliance in terms of occupational health and safety after all the compliance notices. In terms of the unemployment insurance fund, there were also outstanding declarations of workers to the unemployment insurance fund, and a written undertaking was secured for that, and the employer has subsequently complied and provided proof that all the outstanding employees have been declared, or the names of the outstanding employees have been declared to the unemployment insurance fund. The Southern Sun Garden Court, which the committee visited, there were quite a lengthy list of contraventions and lots of complaints, as you will recall when you were there. We have issued compliance notices to the employer, which they have not corrected, and the matter has been referred for prosecution in the beginning of February, same time as the other one. We have referred that matter for prosecution. So outstanding for prosecution then would be the Southern Sun and the other one, as well as the written report which we have to provide about this terrible incident that happened of the assault of the worker. Those two are for prosecution. The other matters have been complied to.
Sorry, members, do you want to ask? I have more questions on the garden court, but let me give you an opportunity first.
Thanks, Chair. I'm not sure whether there's something wrong with my package. I can't find this garden court report, and I was interested in it because there was an issue of the employer there where it was not clear who the employer is. What has been done about that?
It will be important to... Was any body sent up? No, okay. It is important to know what are the issues that are due for prosecution. It was there that the lot as well. Workers were required to work overtime Sundays and they are not paid, double paid. They would not, they will find their own transport. There were a number of things, and there are those who are coming from the former employer, and the way that transference of workers from one employer to another was done without workers, and as a result, they've lost. There's a lot there. So maybe let's just hear what is exactly that you are busy with there, and what is due for prosecution.
Chairperson, thank you. The garden court is not in the presentation. It's been omitted from the presentation, and I have, since your request for me to summarize, moved to the Word document. So I apologize for confusing the honorable members. But the comprehensive report is the Word report that we have provided. On page 20, then, of the Word report, you will see what the actions are that we are, what the problems were still at the Garden Court. It seems as if they've simply just ignored the whole matter of the investigation and the inspections of the inspectors. If you will look at the paragraph which is conclusion, there were quite a lot. The whole issue was that MMJ sales agreement, which was the transfer of the workers, etc. And they had to provide us all these documentation, and so they simply have not done so. So all this forms part of the prosecution document, which we are compiling to take to the Labour Court. So there was non-compliance from the Southern Sun. All the matters that were raised, which we found that we're not complying on, form part of our docket, which must go to or file, which must go to the Labour Court.
Checked if those workers who gave us that information are still there, or they are completely new set of workers. Because in most cases, once you report, the workers get fired, including in that place, that recycling company. Have you checked? When inspectors go there, they do talk to workers, because it's important to know whether the workers are still there or workers have been fired as a result, because that is going to create problems for us. When we go for oversight, people are not going to be free to talk to us because they know we leave, and when we leave, they lose their jobs. So can you also follow that? Because once you do that, you'll be able to know what is going on. It's that recycling, and then which other farm? What was the problem with that farm where we were not given a space to see, where they didn't want to speak to us, they had no chairs, they had no room for you? What was that? What were the issues there? what were the issues there? Or the issues that there were no people, yes. There, people were working in the farm. What is the name of that farm? Can you ask? There's a farm where we had a long argument with the employer because he took us to a dirty bottle, a very dirty place, dirty toilets. We didn't want to be there. We ended, what's the name of the land? Ida? TG? Today it's a TG Engelbracht farm. Oh, it's still coming? Okay. Then in that farming, in that farm, workers had no, there were no air pollution facilities in the farm. Has since been sorted out? Because
yes.
That... So everything is sorted out.
Yeah, that, okay. The Tirasano farm.
Is it Tirasano?
After the contravention notice was issued, the farmer has complied and provided ablution facilities or sanitary facilities. Chairperson, if you will allow me, the issue of Southern Sun and whether they have dismissed the people who spoke to you, I'll have to defer to the manager on the ground. I have not been, I don't have that information. I don't know if he has got it, perhaps if we can ask Mr. Albani. If not, in the very same written report that we will give you about the matter of Walker Industries, we will make a written report on this matter.
All
the sites
that we have visited. So you need to speak to workers.
Okay.
Because the other thing that workers complain about, you go and talk with the management, and then after that you leave. So you need to go to workers. You go to the workplace exactly where they are working and ask these questions, because that's when you are going to get the accurate information. Anything, members? Honorable Tongwana.
Can I just check again on Tirasano? On the inspection and findings. I'm not sure of the slight number, but the contravention notice, it says the employer has been given 60 days to comply with the contents of contravention notice issued. Now, I wanted to check as to when did the 60 days start.
Chairperson, the 60 days start on the day of the issuing of the contravention notice, and then it runs for 60 days thereafter. The day of the inspection normally, or the day thereafter, if the contravention notice is a lengthy one. But in this particular case, the employer has indeed been complying after the issuing of the contravention notice. So it was for the ablution facilities, amongst others, and which had to be issued, and the employer is now complying to that. I'm trying to determine and see if I can see what day the inspection was done, but it does not seem as if it is in here in the report, unless I'm missing it now. But normally it starts on the day of the inspection going forward, or the day of the issuing of the contravention notice.
They done away with that truck with a certain party's emblem, a big one. Someone laughs. Have they done away with that truck? Imagine if other people go in there, because there were allegations that people left to vote for that party, and there was that truck there. So follow up that as well.
Sorry, Chair, just a quick housekeeping thing. That aircon was set to 28 degrees. I mean, seriously, Portia, and can we not check this? 28 degrees, we're sweating in here. I've just tried to turn it down to 16 or something that we can survive.
That's also really well.
I would like to look at, in terms of the inspections conducted and then the findings that we had. It is in the same document as the one for Northern Cape, and the slide that I'll be looking at is slide 32. We have obviously conducted inspections in terms of legislation which is applicable to us, which would be OHS UI compensation and then the Employment Equity Act, because this industry does have a bargaining council. Quite a number of agencies, government departments participated in the inspections. You will see that it was the Department of Labor, the Bargaining Council for the clothing and textile sector. We used the immigration officials of the Department of Home Affairs. As you know, there were lots of allegations around that as well. Officials from SOCTU, the Department of Economic Development, Environmental Tourism, Trade and Industries, the police and the fire brigade. So it was quite a lot of inspections that were done, and quite a lot of findings that we had. Amongst this, the general findings, which was cross-cutting at most of these workplaces, were the fact that there was a strong presence, next slide please, strong presence of foreign labor, and they did not have valid work permits. And these tendencies obviously allow then these people to reside in the factories, and with the resulting health and safety issues. And then what we also found is that employers then threatened to close the businesses, which you're also aware of. And then a trend where most of the employers are converting the companies into cooperatives, and they make the members of the cooperatives, and then the employer-employee relationship falls away. Quite a number of inspections were done, and I think we must look at slide number 34. And this is unfortunately written in that format, but there were quite a number of contraventions in terms of the Occupational Health and Safety Act, and then also Unemployment Insurance Act and so forth. The designated employers have been referred to, some of them have been referred to the Labour Court, which have already imposed heavy fines on them. Then there was also a case of human trafficking in Newcastle. Can I respond to that as well? Thank you. There was wide media coverage about the Chinese company which was allegedly using human or guilty of human trafficking. We raided the factory on the 3rd of February after we received a complaint about workers that were being held against their will. We issued a prohibition notice and a contravention notice to the employer for the Occupational Health and Safety Act, which is, you have heard already, a problem in this sector. And we have also secured a written undertaking for the failure to register workers with the UIF. The Chinese nationals and one Swazi supervisor were arrested, and they were charged with human trafficking, whilst the other three Chinese nationals were charged for not having the correct documentation. The Hawks apprehended 77 employees, and then 10 South Africans were released, but the other foreign workers were deemed as victims and referred to a place of safety. So there was indeed a case for human trafficking. And then we've had a number of meetings to clarify the different roles that all our departments have to play in this matter, so that we can ensure that we can prevent or try and prevent as many of these incidents as possible. A meeting was also held with the Chinese Chamber of Employers and the municipality, where we requested them to conduct workshops for the Chinese and Taiwanese employers so that we can explain to them exactly what it is that is expected what is expected of them. And this will take place during March of this year. Thank you, Chairperson. Members, thank you so much. Members, I think Honorable Oliver.
Then, Chair, I just wanted to applaud them on taking initiative on this case of human trafficking, because this is one of the challenges facing South Africa. How I wish you will do the same now, even if there's no whistleblower. Check these areas so that at least we try and minimize it as we could. In fact, we want eradication thereof. Thanks.